Hello, good morning, everyone. So I was having a debate with someone about the fact that they were saying, listen, you only need to get a calorie deficit to lose weight. You don't need to worry about protein, okay? And there's a truth to it in the fact that calories is important. Your energy intake is important. If you're not in an energy deficit, you're not going to lose weight, right? Or lose fat, more specifically. And lose tissue either, muscle tissue. So why is it that we actually focus on protein as well? So what's the point of focusing on protein if perhaps it doesn't help for fat loss or weight loss? So there was an actual research done on this, and I think it's a very important research to be reminded of, and I remind myself of this often, is, and the it was titled, Higher Compared with Lower Protein During an Energy Deficit Combined with Exercise Promotes Greater Lean Mass Gain, muscle, and Fat Mass Loss. And this was a randomized control trial, which means it's one of the top quality studies you can get. So we've always theorized like high protein helps us feel fuller from our food, right? Which is great, which means maybe it's going to make us eat less, which also is shown in the research. So there's research studies out there that let people eat whatever they want or however much food they want. And one group has got like no protein kind of target and one group has. And the group that kind of hits a protein target then is told you can eat whatever you want, eats considerably less protein per day, even if they don't track it themselves. So protein does bring our satiety up, which means we feel fuller, which means we may eat less over the day. And protein also, when it comes to one part of our metabolic rate, so our metabolism, as a reminder, is made up of four components. So what we mean by metabolism is total energy you need a day to basically function in everything you do. 50 to 60% of that energy is needed for your kind of survival stuff, like your organs, everything working, just you functioning, surviving. 50 to 60% of that is your BMR, base metabolic rate. Then you've got the other 40%, and this can vary, one of them is your thermic effect of food, which is the calories needed to digest the food you eat. So obviously the more food you eat, the higher this will be, numbers-wise, and the less food you eat, the less it'll be. Then you've got physical exercise, which is the smallest component. That's why there's a lot of things out there that says, you know, working out isn't great for fat loss, which is true because, or weight loss is true because it doesn't burn that many calories, but it can help with muscle, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And then the last one is your NEAT, your non-exercise activity. And some of you might be thinking, you've gone over this before, Scott. I know, but it's important to know about this right now, so when I get into this research. And your NEAT is one of the things you can change the most. Some people, it could be 5% of their total energy burned a day. Some other people, it could be 30% of their total energy burned per day. It's one of those factors that you can really change. It's one of the variables that you can actually make a big difference in. And one of the main ways to increase this is your step count. So if your step count goes up, you're moving, you're standing up, you're always on the move. And I'll always remember the stats on, if you're laying on your back, okay, versus sitting upright, you burn, I think, 4% more calories sitting up than laying on your back. So if you're watching TV, laying on your back versus sitting up. If you stand up, you're burning 19% more calories than if you are laying on your back, standing up. If you're standing up and walking really slow, it's something like 58% more calories are burned moving. So just understanding the differences in energy requirements the body needs. If you're laying on the couch all day, yeah, but if you just sit up maybe, or just if you're taking a phone call, standing up and walking around at a really slow pace, this is all going to add up over time. It becomes like a lifestyle. You become more of an active person and your metabolic rate will be generally higher than it was before. So this study looked at, if you go into an energy deficit, what happens if someone's on a higher protein versus lower protein? Is there a difference? Or is the protein benefit simply because the thermic effect of food of protein is higher? So out of the metabolic rate, thermic effect of food is maybe 10-15%. But the reason protein is considered to be better for weight loss is that for every 100 calories of protein energy, it requires 20 to 30 calories or 20-30% to actually digest it, right? So you net gain less energy than carbs and fats. They're near 100%. I think fats are like 98 or 99% and carbs are like 95%. So For every 100 calories of carbs, 95 calories, 5 calories are used to digest it, essentially. For every 100 calories of protein, 20 to 30 calories are required. So over a day, over a week, you might find that a higher protein diet means, and or more percentage of your calories coming from protein means that you use more energy to digest, so then it makes it easier to get into a deficit. Does that make sense? Don't worry if it's not making sense right now. It's just one thing people are saying. And so as I was debating with someone, saying, well, protein only really works because it fills you up, so you eat less, and actually it requires more calories to digest it. That's why it's better. Maybe that's why there's some fat loss benefits to protein. But let's have a look at what the research showed. So they used a 4-week period, and they went into a 40% reduction in their energy intake, so 40% under maintenance. One group was to consume 1.2 grams of protein per kilogram. So if we're going to use my weight, I'm 82 kilograms. So that's me eating 98 grams of protein a day. And then the other group was told to eat 2.4 grams of protein per kilogram. So that would be me eating 2.4, which means 196. So basically, 98 grams of protein a day versus 196 grams of protein a day for me. So basically double, right? You may think, well, what's the difference? And they were doing workouts, by the way. So they were doing workouts 6 days a week, which is important here. So the results showed this. The protein group, high protein group, had a greater loss of fat mass than the control group, which is the lower protein. Okay. All measures of exercise performance improved in both groups. All right. And the protein group actually gained muscle, and the other group didn't gain. They slightly lost. Okay, so the results show that during an energy deficit, consumption of a diet containing 2.4 grams of protein per kilogram was more effective than consuming 1.2 in promoting increases in muscle and losses of fat mass when combined with a higher volume resistance training program. Okay, so you got 4.8 versus 3.5. of fat mass. So that's, you know, 1.3 kilograms more fat mass was lost. And also 1.2 kilograms of lean mass was gained in the high protein, and 0.1 kilograms was gained in the other group. So this is a big difference. And it doesn't just come down to the fact that protein makes you feel fuller and you need more protein for digesting. Protein is used in every cell in the body. Protein helps maintain muscle mass. When your body is in a deficit, it will take energy from your fat stores, but it'll also take energy from your muscle. If it needs to break down muscle for energy, you'll do it. So whatever you can do to preserve that muscle, it's more likely that the body will keep going to the fat stores for energy as opposed to using muscle as well. So it's kind of protective mechanism of it. So as I mentioned in yesterday's podcast, when I covered the Minnesota starvation experiment, where it showed that people's hunger levels didn't return to normal after semi-starvation. So after 24 weeks of semi-starvation and losing loads and loads of weight, they didn't feel normal hunger levels again until their muscle mass was replaced. But their muscle mass weren't replaced until their body weight, their fat mass, was 180% beyond what it was before, which means their fat mass was easily regained, right? So they went from lost a lot of fat and muscle, they gained a lot of fat back once they were able to eat again, but it took them a significantly longer time to build the muscle back. And only when the muscle went back to baseline before the starvation did the hunger levels come down again. So losing muscle makes it a lot harder to have control of your energy intake and your kind of hunger levels and signaling, because the signaling will always be strong to keep eating to regain the muscle mass, because it's so important for us. So when I was debating this person, it's like, so all we got to do, right, when you look, and you might look back at yourself and when you're 20, 30 years in time and go, well, so Scott was saying all I had to do was be in an energy deficit, which I can track and is fine, eat a higher protein diet, which, yeah, to start with, for some of you might be difficult because you're not used to it and you might be eating 80 grams a day or 70 grams a day. Then you might have to think about increasing the portion sizes you already have of protein foods. So you might have to double the portion size of the meat you eat today. You might want to add some protein yogurts in, extra like Baby Bell Lights, some protein bars, protein shakes, stuff like that. But once you've nailed that, and actually the minor inconvenience of just planning food a bit to get your protein up, and you look at the benefits of it over the next 20 years of your life, you will kick yourself for not doing those two things, which is calorie intake and protein intake. Making sure your calorie intake comes down to make sure your body fat comes down to being in line with what you want to be as a healthy human being. And then also your protein intake to be high enough over a long enough period of time that you maintain your muscle mass so you're metabolically healthier as you get older. Right, and when you look back at all you had to do was kind of a bit more mindful about your eating, a bit more mindful about planning protein foods, you're going to really kick yourself for not doing this, because it's so hard once you've lost muscle down the line to put it back on. Very, very hard. And one member mentioned to me after the podcast yesterday, I wonder how much damage I did to myself doing all the yo-yo diet, and I wonder how much harder I made it for me to kind of just lose fat and keep it off. Because remember, they would have done a yo-yo diet, lost 20 pounds of fat, and probably lost 3 or 4 pounds of muscle. Put the 25 pounds of fat back on, and not gain the muscle back. So feel even worse, feel hungrier, back to baseline before they started the diet, they're even hungrier again. And I've seen this in our own research we did on, I think it was 4,000 or 1,000? I think 4,000 Slim and World, so 4,000 people from Slim and World and Weight Watchers. Asked them a bunch of questions, did the data analysis, and yeah, it showed the more diet someone did, the likelihood is they were trying to lose weight for the rest of their life, because they were trying to lose it fast and regaining it, feeling super hungry again, losing more again and regaining it. And then they get to the 10th cycle of yo-yo dieting, they're 30 pounds heavier than they were before the 10 cycles ago, and their muscle mass is down by 10 pounds, so their body fat percentage is way higher. Does that make sense? And it's not to scare you, it's to show you that the small actions every day are actually all you need to do. The small actions are going to really help you. Your calorie intake, your protein intake, and if you're going to do the steps, it's important to do steps, okay? 7,000 plus steps is a good place to start a day. Try and aim for 7,000 if you're below it. If you're beyond 7,000 steps, happy days, but make sure you know your 7 is your foundation. And then resistance training, this study obviously had 6 workouts a week, but we know from other research studies now, and especially with the new guidelines from the American Heart Association, that 2 strength or resistance training workouts a week is enough. 2. Okay, so it's not much, it's not complicated, it's not that you have to follow some crazy plan. You can even use your body weight. You can just do the basic exercises twice a week, and over time increase the weight or increase the intensity, and that's all it takes to kind of maintain or even gain muscle mass during these phases, and that's going to help you a lot with your journey. So this is just a reminder really of the importance of a higher protein diet. If you're on the apps, your protein target's already been worked out for you. Depending on your experience and stuff, you might start on the lower end of the scale and then you'll gradually increase to being a higher protein, to being more towards the like optimal part of the range. But it's a gradual process. It's never like trying to make you completely overhaul everything. You'll be closer than you think when it comes to this. So look, it's exciting news. It means you don't have to do super crazy, 6 hours of exercise or cardio a day with like extreme carnivore keto diet and all its nonsense. You just got to track your calories and your protein and your steps and maybe do 2 workouts a week, and you'll see me in 10 years and you'll be glowing. And you look back and go, wow, I'm so chuffed I kept those habits, because they're so simple but effective. And that's really what this is all about. It's the simple stuff done over time that's super effective, that gets you results, nothing complicated. And remind yourself as well on the Pareto's principle, you know, the 20% of what you do delivers 80% of the results. 20% of what you do for weight loss delivers 80% of the weight loss results. So those 20% are calories and protein and steps. Everything else is the details. 20% of the tasks you do at work will deliver 80% of the results. 20% of the workforce actually do 80% of the productivity. It's everywhere. So focus on the 20 and don't get pulled into the 80 that delivers the 20, if that makes sense. Because that's what social media is all about. Focusing on the 20 that doesn't matter, The 80 that doesn't matter, that delivers the 20. So it's a lot more effort for little little game back. But other than that, have a good weekend. You see Easter weekend. There was a crazy article in the UK, like some doctor was like, I urge everybody not to eat a full Easter egg in one go. Mate, grow up. Why not? I've seen how thin chocolate is in Easter eggs. If you probably condensed it, it's probably two chocolate bars, two normal chocolate bars. Get over it. If you want to have a full Easter egg, guys, have it. The only thing I would say is there is a point where you overeat that you actually become bloated and you actually feel horrible and you don't want to socialize and you feel sluggish and heavy and you don't feel great and you won't become the person you want to be over the weekend or to enjoy the social side of it maybe. So just take a step back, not in terms of like weight gain or weight loss, just take a step back and go, am I actually going to feel terrible after this like third egg? Or should I just calm down a bit now because I don't want to be on the couch in pain because I've got so much food in my stomach. That's really what I would say is the main benefit of not overindulging over the weekend, is to not get into that state. So just have a step back sometimes. Think, am I being moderate now or am I being a bit silly? And you might stop yourself eating that 13th Dairy Milk Easter egg. But I think I'm going to go for... they're all the same, innit? Come on. Let's be honest, they're all the same. I want a Reese's Easter egg with the thing in the middle, giant Reese's one with a peanut butter in the middle, but I don't think they'll make that, probably against the law or something because there's so much sugar in it, which isn't bad. It's just like, if so, you know, we will eat it in one go, and we'll have the biggest glucose spike of all time, and then I'll be jailed by the glucose goddess on Instagram. Anyway, I'm rambling. Have a good weekend, and I'll see you back on Monday.